It's that time of the week where we speak to the former Leeds United chairman, Ken Bates, and he joins me on the line now. Evening, Kibby, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good, good. Plenty to talk about, as usual. We'll kick off with FIFA. The saga rumbles on. The Brazilian legend...
Gotta rumble on for a long time.
Yeah, exactly. Zico, the latest person to come out and say he's going to run for FIFA presidency, the Brazilian legend. But this week, FIFA as well decided to postpone the kicking off the bidding for 2026. What do you make of how this rumbling on has progressed since we last heard from you?
Well, I mean, every day you read something else. And every week you hear something else. It's just like an unravelling, isn't it? More and more is coming out. And more people are running for the hills to cover their backside. Make sure it's not their fault when it all goes wrong. FIFA is a total bloody disgrace. At last, the Swiss authorities are getting involved. It should have done a long time before. And when somebody says, well, if Blatter's resigned, why is he staying on until whenever? Apparently they can't hold an emergency meeting until July and the Congress until December. Makes you cynical, it's the emergency. You can hold it in a fortnight's time. Congress, hold it in July. I'm afraid cynical thought, yeah, it'll take... The reason why he's not leaving until December, it would take him 7 months to shred all the documents to avoid people finding out what's going on. I thought, well, what was a very significant thing I read in the paper yesterday, the reason why they couldn't investigate the 2018 and 2018 bidding process, because the Russian FA lost all their emails. Now, you know, we all make a few mistakes occasionally, all careless. But the Russian FA, you know, with the thoroughness of the KGB and the Russian Communist Organization, lost every email and didn't have any backups. Do me a favour. It's always an insult to people's intelligence. And then, of course, we've got Qatar. Now, the thing about Qatar, assuming that anybody in FIFA had any intelligence, other than how to take a backhander, let's deal with a few facts and figures. Qatar is in the Gulf. July and August, temperatures 100 to 100, even 40 degrees Fahrenheit. Now I know, because when I lived in London, had all these religious, quietly spoken, Quran-addicted Arabs, used to come to London to avoid the heat. And they'd bring their wives and their children, their families, and they put them up in the Hilton Hotel in Chelsea Harbour. The Conrad Hotel. But the men used to stay at the Dorchester, 3 miles away. Why? Well, because 200 yards away was Shepherd's Market, where all the nightclubs, brothels, hookers, and prostitutes were. So you didn't have to walk too far. And on the occasion you went into these nightclubs, which I did occasionally, particularly in the White Element Club in Curzon Street, food was great, you see the tables laid out for the Arabs, where normally you ask for a drink, and have a bottle of vodka and whiskey, the bottles were on the table. All bloody hypocrites. So how the hell could FIFA, who knew all that sort of thing going on, could they go for Qatar in July and August? Now, if he does go ahead, they're now talking of switching it to November, December to avoid the worst of the heat. Just think how much damage that's going to do, not to the Premiership, but all the little clubs, but throughout Europe, but in England as well, right? I mean, wants to watch Rochdale versus Bury live, and go to the ground and pay your £2 off, £2 or £5, whatever they charge, when you can watch Brazil versus Spain on TV. They will do so much long-term damage, the grassroots of football. None of this can be stopped. Quite clear there's now pressure on the sponsors. If they pull out, it'd be a good damn. Then all the European TV is going to say, we're not going to bid for it. We're not going to show it. Dead. That happened, then FIFA is then a dead duck in the water. More importantly, all UEFA should say, we're not competing. Same with Russia as well. So you can have your World Cup. You're not going to have Europe, North America, Australasia. Get on with it. And meanwhile, in the American government, which is the strongest government in the world, and most of the sponsors of FIFA are either American-based or European-orientated, the pressure on them to withdraw. It's the only way to bring this house of cards down. And well done to David Gill and the lady, whose name I can't remember, her favourite, she's really pulled out, and Greg Dyke, who's seen the change on the road to Damascus. We should be fighting FIFA all the way. And well done to the Times, the Sunday Times, the Mail, and all the other newspapers who are carrying on all the time this relentless campaign against FIFA and Blatter. And I'm not a betting man. Wouldn't be surprised if Blatter finishes up with asylum in Russia.
In terms of the way forward at the top of FIFA, I mentioned at the top that Zico, the Brazilian football legend, has put his name forward. There are other football names involved. Is it someone that's been in the game and, you know, come through this ex-footballer into football politician that is needed at the top of FIFA to help this reform?
No, no,
or is it someone with a big political background?
That's just a side issue. Forget people who put their name forward. Don't forget Paddy Power sponsored somebody 3 or 4 months ago, which denigrated and introduced the main thing. Forget who's going to come in. The main place is going to be sorted out. All we need is an administrator in, sort the place and clean up from start, top to bottom. I read that 400 people applauded Mr. Blatter walking in. And it was, 400? What are we 400 people for? Probably 150 who sat with the rest. Then you can spend more money in the lower levels of the game throughout the world. And not to people like Jack Warner or Chubb Blazer. Put it into the backward parts of the world where football's still two shirts and a ball in a field somewhere. They're the people you should be helping. I read somewhere that Blatter goes everywhere by private plane, hasn't flown on a private, on a public scheduled flight for 40 years. Sounds even worse than our, than the British Overseas Development Ministry. All these other charities that spend money like water and very little reaches the bottom. Anyway, let's move on. Let's talk about Leeds United.
Leo Redfern has returned to his role in the academy this week. What did you make of that decision by Neil to return after being overlooked and badly mistreated, as many people say, for the head coach's position?
I think Neil Redfern is a very honourable man. He's a very strong man. I think he made a very brave decision, because he knows that whatever he does, he's still responsible to whatever whim comes out of Elland Road. But Neil Redfern has done a marvellous job at Leeds United. Although I must say it myself, he's one of my appointees who I took in the recommendation, I think, of Gwynne Windham. But Neil, he's part of Lucy. He used to be part of the English ladies team, international team. They have done a marvellous job. They surfed the whole of Yorkshire, get the best Yorkshire kids for Leeds United. What we're seeing coming through now, I think, is just the beginning of the conveyor belt. There are loads and loads of kids there who are coming through. I'm providing Neil is given a free hand, not bloody interfered with. Hopefully there aren't any more Salim Patels and Hisham Malrayas. He can do it. Let's get on with it. Leeds have a really bright future, homegrown players. And we wish him, Suzanne and I wish him, the very best on all the best. And to the kids too. And my message to the kids is, how much do you want it? They just, when they wake up in the morning, look in the mirror, ask themselves the same question. How much do I want it? If they're good enough, they'll make it. I'd love to see Leeds United winning the Premiership, the homegrown team, like Leeds had 30, 40 years ago.
They're certainly in good hands, and we wish Neil well back in his role in the academy. We move on to David Haig, and pretty much every interview for the last year, David Haig and his plight has been discussed. There's obviously never been any news regarding him getting his day in court, but that seems a step closer now that he is going to face charges for embezzlement over in Dubai, where he's being held.
Well, I think we should take a step back. There's a lot about GFH we don't know. We do know there are a bunch of chances. We should never be allowed to be in the investment business. But when Haig was charged on civil things, so that he was arrested and put in jail, then GFH just didn't proceed with it. Didn't do anything at all. Just left it. They didn't progress it. Haig was never interviewed. It was very simple. A bit like FIFA, actually. His auntie shut him up. Get him in jail and shut him up because he knew too much. And some of the stuff that Haig told me, which I'll elaborate in a minute, we'll illustrate that. So why has he been in jail for a year? Has he been interviewed? GFH have been over. They didn't do it for any reason. They didn't want to keep me out of the way and keep me shut up incommunicado. Now, for whatever reason, we don't know, Kermit said, Dubai now decided to charge him with two criminal charges. Well, great, that's a good thing. And the reason why it's a good thing is now he'll now be interviewed, he'll now be charged. That will give him an opportunity in public to state his case. But more importantly, now he's been criminally charged, maybe the British consulate in Dubai will take their finger out the appropriate place take a break from their internal cocktail parties and actually look after the interests of a British citizen. You're being held unfairly, incommunicado, in a foreign jail. Because so far they've done bugger all. William Hague, no relation, the former foreign secretary, also did bugger all. Which is a total and utter disgrace. Interestingly, there's another case going on, the Westminster Magistrates Court in London. That was due to be heard yesterday, now being postponed until tomorrow. So unfortunately I can't tell you the outcome. But basically, David Hague was entrusted to Dubai under false impressions. And he suggested he was a victim of human trafficking. He got in there by false pretenses. And the charges against two GFHs, two executives, they committed criminal charges. It's going to be interesting. Because those two guys are supposed to turn up in court tomorrow. And if they don't, we don't expect them to, when David Hague, who's got a brilliant QC acting pro bono, that means he's doing it for nothing, has alleged they are guilty of human trafficking, not turning up. If they don't turn up, hopefully they'll issue an extradition warrant. Those two plonkers step outside Bahrain to be arrested and shipped back to London to stand trial. Of course, they're terrified, which is why they want David Hague banged up. Now, David Hague told me a lot of things, some of which he supplied with documentation. And I've seen some of the emails. I'll just give you one example. Hisham sent an email to David Hague, which said, start digging as much dirt as you can on Sean Harvey and Gwyn Williams to see how we can sack them without paying them their legal rights. Now, Sean Harvey had a clause in his contract which said if there's a change of control, then he would guarantee a certain payment. And GFH were trying to avoid paying it. That's what Hague's instructions were. Of course, they couldn't find anything because Harvey hadn't done anything wrong. In William's case, they accused him of something which had taken place 7 years earlier. I'm surprised they won that case on that. But then apparently, Salim Patel told David Hague, remember, Salim Patel is a strict Muslim, doesn't believe in alcohol or drinking at all, Quran, Shia, all that kind of stuff. Said to Hague, take Sean Harvey out and get him drunk, and then see what he can find on Ken Bates. What dirt you want on Ken Bates? Which Hague did not pursue, but it demonstrates how evil these people are, what length they would go, not on a contract, and how evil they are. And David Hague is at the end of that.
Just lastly, in terms of Scottish devolution, the SNP trying to push for more powers and to make amendments to the Scottish Bill without going through Westminster.
Let me tell you a story about independence, okay? So now, two fishes, sturgeon and salmon, want to be independent, okay? I was in Greece. Oh God, this must be, I think, 70 years ago. On my holidays. We're staying just outside Athens. You know, these are very interesting holiday villages. We had your little villas or chalets parked on it. You went into the main place. Anyway, I was sitting there with Jesse in my swimming costume reading my book. And my son, Robert, who was the, barroom lawyer of the family, aged about 11, came up to see me. I was reading. He said, Daddy, yes, son, I've been talking to Catherine, his eldest sister. He was number two in line. And we'd like to be independent. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you know, instead of doing what you tell us and Mummy tells us, well, we just thought we think we can do our own thing. We should be able to make our own decisions, blah, blah, blah. I said, OK, fair enough, get on with it. You mean that, Daddy? He said, yeah, sure, no problem. Come back to my book. Heard him running and he said, Catherine, Daddy said, yes. I carried on. A couple of hours later, he came back about something and I said, Robert, ask me a question. He said, yes, Daddy, what? I said, what are you going to do for money? Where are you going to live? He said, what do you mean? I said, well, you're independent now, aren't you? A long pause. His face cleared and he said, we're not independent at all, are we? I said, that's the number one, son. Independence means independence. Now, moving on quickly to Scotland, I saw this funny little woman, Dakota Sturgeon, on American TV. She was listed as a comedian, which probably got it right recently. Now, and then Salmon poncing about on the English Parliament, Westminster, saying about this nation and that nation. Well, hang on, let's take the Scots. So they get independence. Okay. Well, we rebuild Hadrian's Wall. They can't come in. British passports are no longer valid. The two banks, the Royal Bank of Scotland and the Bank of Scotland, which were the biggest disasters in our 2008 financial collapse, we no longer have the backing of the Bank of England. They will not have access to British funds. The day after independence, the English will not transfer any money to Edinburgh to pay the civil servants' wages, or the pensions, or the benefits. And Nicola Sturgeon, he thought, great, we're going to nick we got all the oil funds from the North Sea. Well, first of all, of course, the oil price has collapsed. Secondly, the Orkney and Shetland Islands think they don't want to be part of Scotland anyway. They'd rather be part of Norway. So when the chips are down, and we moved Trident out, let's come down to Portsmouth or Haverford West, with a loss of 20,000-50,000 jobs. How are they going to manage? Because these people with the big yaps don't do any thinking, pencil and paper working. And of course, with this terrible thing we've heard about Scottish Nats on Twitter, the way he treats Charles Kennedy, slagging people off and blah, blah, and bullying and blah, blah, blah. What they got to offer? Why should they? And Miss Sturgeon is saying they're to promote investment. Well, they don't want to invest in Scotland. What for? What they got to offer? If you read the papers, very slowly, people are moving south of the border. People now saying, Scottish landowners saying, hang on, what should I and why should I do that? I think what you might see is Russia coming in by the back door, happy to help. Is that what the Scots want? I think what Scots, ordinary Scots, every Scot within the Gorbals or in Leith, sit down quietly one night with a wee dram and think it through. Forget the headlines. Work out the facts. And stop being so bloody stupid. And realise the tail, in the end, never wags the dog.